Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. In the studio from the Karioi Project, I've got Crystal and Georgia. Good morning.
Kia ora.
Today we're going to talk about bats. And Georgia, you're the bat specialist at the Karioi Project. Is that a good way to describe you?
Yes. So I did my master's in bats many moons ago and have been working with bats ever since, really.
Okay. Why did you choose bats?
That's a great question.
Because mostly
they chose me.
They chose. They came to you in the night.
No, I actually was interested in spatial ecology and wanted to do my master's roughly in that, and actually just approached a couple of different supervisors, and a bat project really stood out, and the rest is history, I guess.
Okay, so is there something like personally fascinating to you about bats?
Yeah, at the time I just enjoyed all ecology in New Zealand generally, but since studying bats, yes, the love of bats has definitely increased. And yeah, they're unique little creatures, particularly the ones in New Zealand, and particularly the ones that I studied for my master's, which crawl along in the ground, and the only other bat in the world that does that is the vampire bat.
Ooh. I was going to go with the connection. That's really derailed me. I was going to go with the connection with, we've got so many birds that also don't fly, so this is a bat that doesn't fly.
Yeah, well, it can fly, but yeah, a bat that chooses to forage along on the ground, which is incredibly unique across the world.
And does that also therefore mean it's endangered, like a lot of our birds?
Yes, both our species are pretty highly endangered.
Okay, and you've been doing some research. We've actually got a map open on the computer in front of us here. You've been doing some research in our area about bat populations. How are they looking?
Well, it's hard to get the details because they're such cryptic species. They're very small, fly massive distances, and roam around at night, but we can get rough kind of indices of activity using the acoustic monitors that we used for this survey. And so of the data that we've got back so far, we've got 26 sites, and of that, 19 recorded bat presence.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's pretty high levels given kind of the landscape we're looking at here, so it's cool.
So the map we're looking at includes the mountain, Tamata, Tiuku, almost back to the Divi?
Yep.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, beyond. Yeah, so it goes beyond Tiuku.
A lot of it's on farmland and actually not so much on the mountain and not in town. Is that expected that it's not on the mountain, but or is it?
I think it's a bit of an artifact of how hard it is to survey the mountain, I'd say.
Yeah.
So the habitat on the mountain, the mature trees, the insects that you'll have in that forest, they'll definitely be there, and it's likely that they're roosting there as well.
Okay.
But they're edge-adapted species. So in areas like farmland, it's quite easy to pick out kind of the groups of trees or the waterways that they're likely to kind of gravitate towards in the paddock land or the open area around. But when you're trying to survey the mountain, you know, they'll be flying over the canopy the whole time, and it's probably more of an artifact of the habitat there.
Okay, so it's actually just a bit hard for the recorders to hear them.
Yeah, it's just difficult to survey in dense forest, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, so it's a challenging environment. Maybe some AI can come in handy for that. I know that's a buzzword, but I also know from the sound work I do that the AI can actually pull things out of recordings that, you know, we can't really pick up very easily, so maybe someone's working on that somewhere in the world at the moment.
Yeah, deploying some drones up above the canopy and
things
like that,
right.
Could be possibilities. Yeah.
How big's your budget?
Probably not that big.
Not that big. So you are working part time for the Karioi Project at the moment on this?
I'm actually the new seabird ranger as
Right.
So a jack of all trades at the moment. So
learning
a lot.
Crystal, you must have been pleased to get a seabird ranger and a bat specialist all in one.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I mean, obviously we were sad to see Nick go, who's been our seabird ranger and backyard hub coordinator back before that for quite a few years. And then, you know, just a reflection of this amazing community is that you put the word out and you get amazing people like Georgia apply who are willing to spend some time working part-time for Karioi Project as well as doing her ecological consulting work. So so it's a bit of a score, and you know, often I just want to double check. But yeah, like I've been the one of the main ecologists on the project, like in terms of my background.
Yeah.
And the other team members have come from other really diverse backgrounds and have learned the skills either, you know, as volunteers or as, you know, they've come on the job. And so it's really nice to have someone come in like Georgia, who we literally had done the surveys with the bat monitors, got like local ecologists helping us out and even local dock people designing kind of this the deployment of the monitors, like statistically designed so that we can replicate the study every couple of years. So we got lots of volunteer support to do the survey. But then just as we were about to analyze the data, like there was lots of delays doing that because then you're relying on volunteers. And then Georgia came on board and then I was like, oh, you're doing seabirds, but you've also done bats. And so suddenly it opens up a whole opportunity for us to do more work in that space. And we might do some other things like lizard studies and that, and just like really get a little bit more deeper into the ecological surveys. And that's pretty exciting for me, like just being able to push the project into that space a bit more, just because we have amazing people here in this community, as well as Georgia, to help do some of that stuff.
It's funny that you said you're an ecologist, because I think I was completely forgotten, because you run the project and we talk about all those big picture things all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you probably have moved beyond actual doing ecological work in this project, haven't you,
to
running it.
I like keeping my hand in, so I'll still do a little bit of seabird stuff sometimes, but it's often when, say, we get the species dog in or when we do the pre-season kind of surveys.
One-off
and I might
stuff.
Go out and do some training with our education team like I did this week. But, yeah, when I think back, like you say, like I was working at NIWA and finished in 2011, so that's a long time ago. And so sometimes it's actually a little bit sad because I feel like I've forgotten more than I know from my, you know, my time working as an ecologist. And, like you say, I just don't have the time now to go as deep into anything. And so you feel like you're constantly the jack of all trades and the master of none.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have the master come in, which is Georgia, and it also helps me upskill again. So that's exciting. But yeah, like that is my passion, I guess. It's why I'm here.
Yeah. So Georgia, you're like, no, that information's 10 years old. That here's what you need to know. A bit of that going on.
it's been really good so far. Because I'm not a seabird expert.
Yeah.
It's heaps of learnings for me. And yeah.
I know scientists are very strict about their areas of expertise, but there must be some crossover sort of relevance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I'd call myself a terrestrial ecologist. So, while I often specialise in bats, I do a lot of work, as Crystal mentioned, you know, mokomoko, lizards, birds, etc. And obviously seabirds are birds. So there's definitely crossover. And just generally ecological theory and scientific principles kind of are very broadly applied.
Yeah. So back to we've got this map of bats, not sightings, hearings, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's hot off the press. It's actually just a draft map, which I said to Georgia, can you maybe bring it today? Because it's been a long time coming and this hasn't been distributed yet. So
I have to delete the PDF off my laptop.
Sneak peek, but I will be sending it off to some very important people in the next couple of days.
So, but what does that tell us about the bat population in our area? Is it healthy? Is it endangered? You know, where does it fit kind of on that spectrum?
Unfortunately, we can't really get into that detail about...
This is another thing you get with scientists. They're like, no, I can't really say that because I haven't got sufficient data.
Exactly.
Are you hopeful?
Years of population studies.
Are you hopeful that... I mean, there's obviously been sightings all around the... Or I don't know what we use for the word sightings, but indications all around the place. So it's not all bad by the look of that.
Yeah, absolutely. They're obviously present across, you know, a wide area, which is to be expected because, you know, they can move kilometres in a night.
Yeah.
So I guess we can compare the data that we do have is we have the previous survey that was done in 2019, 2020. Mm. And so if we look at just presence versus absence. In that survey, it was roughly 50-50 at the sites.
Yeah.
And here we've got more sites that we've got presence rather than absence. So
okay.
That's a positive indication.
I guess you want to do more study into the data to see if that's statistically significant.
Yeah, exactly. And where we struggle with bat monitoring is that, so yeah, we're using acoustic recorders that pick up bat echolocation calls essentially. So it's you can't tell whether it's one bat that's moving around the area and made 200 calls or 200 individual bats that have moved through. And so that's where you struggle to get any info on the population numbers, and therefore you can't track if they're going up or down without quite intense long-term statistical work with it.
Right. And is the Karioi project endeavouring to do that, some intense long-term?
Yeah, so this study's been set up so that we can replicate it statistically across time.
Yeah.
So, we probably got a little bit of tidying up and tweaking to do. And, and that's partly also why, how you were commenting about what we pick up on the mountain is because all those areas where we deploy the recorders have all been statistically, allocated, and so we're not picking sites or oh, there's a good roosting spot or there's a good, so they're really random. So next time we do this in 2 years time, we might find there's more, we pick better sites randomly that do pick up the bats, so that kind of over time hopefully we'll pick up some of those subtle differences. But I think the exciting thing about a map like this and showing the distribution is that even though a huge part of our work is focused on the mountain, is the huge benefit of doing predator control on the surrounding farmland and forest edges and also backyards. So I literally had bats in my backyard on Mangatawharu Road two years ago.
Yeah.
We had a malfunction this time, unfortunately. But it just kind of can stimulate people to go and set their trap in their own backyard because there's little biodiversity hotspots all around town and the rural landscape, as well as Toruparu wetland just to the south of Karioi.
Yeah.
And so that's really encouraging just anyone living in this area can contribute by setting traps and doing their own predator control and helping those local species.
So we understand with the birds about how vulnerable they are, especially when nesting. And especially with the oi, with the burrows. But how does it work with bats? What's their equivalent of nesting and how vulnerable are they?
So they roost in pretty much big old trees.
Yeah.
And the longtails tend to roost in relatively small groups. And they move roosts almost on a nightly basis.
Okay.
Which adds to the difficulty in surveying them or monitoring them. But, it's... one of the assumptions why they move roosts is a predator avoidance
behavior. Makes sense.
And studies, long-term population studies in some of the larger forested areas by DOC, for example, down in Fiordland, shows that the populations down there are in decline until they have really broad scale predator control in place,
which right.
is, 3,000 plus hectares. Because they move around so much and, their roosting areas can be dispersed across the landscape in different subcolonies.
So what happens when they've got young bats, baby bats, do they have to stay in one place? Is there a nest equivalent?
No, they so they have maternity roosts where... The breeding mothers will gather, and that's around thermal properties. So they have to leave the young in the roosts at night to go out and feed, and then they'll come, feed themselves and then come back and feed their children.
So can they, they roost hanging upside down?
Mm-hmm.
And so even the real babies can do that?
Yeah, so the babies...
From the word go?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So the babies will stay in the roost and... because there's groups of them in there, they can keep each other warm. And then when they move roosts on that nightly basis, they'll just take their pups with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they? Can they fly, or do they like?
No, they
hold on to them. Like,
yeah, they hang off their teats, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's one way to get about, I suppose. Yeah. All right, I realise I really don't know anything about them. We know the bats are there, they fly around and they make high-pitched noises. Can we hear them?
You can sometimes hear them when they're doing social calls around a roost in particular.
Yeah.
Particularly with the short-tail bats, which we're talking mostly about long tails here. But yeah, when they're doing their kind of commuting, their search phase echolocation calls, and their feeding buzzers when they're honing in on an insect. No, it's way above our hearing range.
Okay, so you have to put it on the computer and
yeah, yeah. So the acoustic frequency monitors down. We use are yeah, targeted at those specific ranges.
Okay, well, are we doing enough work? Like you talked about, how many hectares do you need to cover? Protect to ensure the bats are safe. What was that number before?
I think it's don't quote me. As I say it live on radio, I think it's 3,000 plus hectares, and this is from work that's done in Fiordland mainly, and in other key areas where DOC are doing long term studies. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, that's not necessarily, you can't just take that number and plant it over kind of a rural, semi-urban population. So, there's definitely more work to do around that. But, yeah, the more predator control, the better. And as Crystal said, this is a species in particular where, that kind of rural matrix is really important to protect.
Do they just roost in trees, or will they try and roost in built areas?
Primarily in trees, but they definitely turn up in some pretty random places, under decks in South Auckland.
South of South Auckland.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So still kind of rural.
Yes. Yeah.
We're not likely to see them here in the town hall.
You never do know. The more you survey, the more you'll sometimes find them popping out in areas that are more densely lit. But in this survey, they weren't found right in town or in Rangatahi either, actually.
Okay, so there was some survey done there.
Yeah, but as soon as you kind of get out, you know, even Upper Wainui, Tiahiawa at the dump, those areas, we were picking up bats.
So okay.
Yeah, positive.
What do they eat? I know so little about them.
Aerial insectivores. So, bugs on the wing.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so mosquitoes, midges, yeah, they're really good for mosquito control.
Good, yeah. Can I encourage them around my place? How would I encourage them?
Absolutely.
Grow more mosquitoes, but that's not what I want either.
So predator control, protecting your backyard, big trees, you know, planting trees around, and also limiting light at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, they're not big fans of brightly lit areas.
Do they? I know so little. Do they even have eyes?
Yes, they do.
Functionality, like they're always out at night. They use echolocation.
Yeah, they can see, but echolocation is their primary form of navigation.
Interesting. How did that even evolve when you've got eyes?
I couldn't answer that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. You weren't there at the time.
That's another whole topic, Aaron.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I tend to do that. Like,
we need to read some notes before we get into that.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Crystal, while we've got your attention, we always want to check in on how the oi is doing.
I was just going to show you a picture.
And what is that, Instagram making noises at you, Crystal?
I was just going to... Sorry. That's the first time I've done that.
What were you going to show? Maybe you could
just going to show you a bat picture so you could have a quick look, you know, kind of familiarise yourself. That's right. Should have done this before we started the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's radio anyway. You can only show me the bat picture. So
yeah. Look, guys.
Yeah, hold it up to the microphone. But let's talk about the oi and the stage of their life cycle. Last time we talked to you, they were preparing burrows.
Yep. So they're sitting on eggs now.
All right.
Yep.
So in July.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're winter breeders, and so we've done, you know, we've got all our, you know, as much as we can, predator control set up, cameras in place, and, you know, we've seen them come in, we've seen them come back, They're getting into the burrows and leaving lots of sign. And we actually had someone from the University of Auckland who's doing his PhD guy come and visit. Georgia can maybe talk a bit about that. So he did some burrow scoping and confirmed some of our numbers. So that was pretty cool.
What are the numbers?
I don't have them off the top of my head, but I think in the areas where we were at the time, I think we got confirmed 10 eggs with with birds.
So that's not over the whole project?
No, that's just
it'll be a few more.
Yeah, specific areas. And it's still at that point, that was a couple of weeks ago now, early in the season, so hopefully we've got a few more eggs as well.
Okay. So hopefully, usually at this time of year, we're seeing activity which equals probably birds on eggs because it's a time of year. And we'll hopefully be hitting around 20, maybe a few more. We've got about 50-odd burrows. So
will that be a record?
No, because at the start of, well, I'd have to look, but at the start of the season, about 50% activity out of all our burrows that we have, so between 20 and 25 burrows active, is quite normal.
Yeah,
it's just that whether we can pull them through till December, and that's dependent on both the parents being able to find enough food and coming back regularly to feed the chick and hatch the chick and then feed the chick, and then, so it's a whole it's kind of a reflection of what's happening at sea, whether there's enough food out there and the parents can come back and they don't die on along the way, and then there's it's also what we can do on land, and that's in terms of habitat protection and especially predator control. So all those factors then result in us, well, last year we had, what was it? It was about 10, 11 chicks fledged, which was our record number.
Okay.
So we could still lose like 50%, and that's, unless we get a big incursion, so if we suddenly get a ferret come in, they might take like 7 chicks in one night,
yeah,
which is devastating. And that sometimes happens in November, just before they fledge. So hopefully that won't happen. Actually, we found a ferret on the road the other day that had been killed. So hopefully we can keep those numbers, you know, predator numbers down, and then we'll see good fledging of chicks, which is would be exciting.
You lose some every year, don't you?
We lose some every year, yeah.
Yeah.
So and that's why the monitoring's so interesting, because we know which burrows have fledged 3 chicks and which have fledged none of them, or maybe they fledged one like 3 years ago, and we usually can tell from the activity when we lose burrows. So we can, you know, we've got a really nice table now of data, like kind of from the last 5, 6, 7 years, and we can see where, you know, which burrows have been really successful. And then, but then the other really interesting thing is like we've had cameras on some of the coastal burrows that are really close to the water, and like we literally had one collapse the other day where a whole side of the dune kind of area just collapsed down. Uh-huh. And we lost a whole burrow. So those birds are going to come back and go, oh, my home's gone.
Where's my burrow?
Where's my burrow? So they'll have to re-establish a new burrow, and that can sometimes take a year or two.
Right.
So we're seeing actually more of that at the moment, where we just have had so much impact in that coastal zone area.
Yeah.
From all the storms and that we're losing burrows, and it'll be interesting to see if the birds go back higher up or into the more forested areas, or and what happens. So we're kind of losing burrows in that way as well.
Yeah. So Georgia, what was the piece of research that someone had come down for? Was it?
Oh yeah, so a student, the Auckland student.
Yeah. So he's a PhD candidate at Auckland University.
Yep.
Michael Fox. And he's doing work across a number of different colonies across the North Island. And looking at predator control and fledgling, breeding success in Oi.
So nothing to say yet. He's just getting underway.
Yeah. So he's got some preliminary results, but yeah, he's really only in, this will be his second season of fieldwork, I think. So yeah. Not too much to say yet.
How many seasons will he have to do?
I think normally it's 3 for PhDs.
Takes
I don't know. I don't have one.
Takes a while to get a PhD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we've been talking to Georgia and Crystal from the Karioi Project, and Georgia is the seabird ranger, but also a bat ranger, perhaps. Can we say a bat ranger as well?
Oh, yeah.
This sounds like great. A cool title.
Bat woman.
Yeah.
Bat woman. Need to get you an outfit.
Oh, yeah, no.
No. Not necessary. Unless it's one that stops the rain. Hey, look, it's been really good to chat to you guys. Is there anything else that people need to know, Crystal? Is there any after-school programs? Well, that's all up and running now, isn't it? The term started. So
Well, our after-school program doesn't run in term three, but okay. We've got all our in-school programs running this term, actually. They've all been kind of ended up in term three, which is quite full-on for our team. So we're doing all our junior school species workshops on a secret species. I don't think that has been released yet, what they're going to do this year. And then we're also doing Manaaki Owl with year 7 and 8. And so every student in year 7 and 8 gets to come out with us for 2 days.
Yeah.
And they learn about the seabirds and trapping and do some outdoor bush skills. So that's another partnership we have with the school, spending time with those students. So that's pretty exciting. Probably the one other thing is that we haven't mentioned is that we also have the little penguin. They share burrows or sometimes compete or have burrows in similar areas to the grey-faced petrel. And it's just really good for people to be aware at this time of year that they're coming in. Most evenings and depart again in the morning. So if you're walking your dog along the southern beach areas between pretty much the beach and Whale Bay, it's really, really important that you have your dog under control or on a lead. Especially at those early times of the day.
Yeah.
So that we have had little penguins attacked by dogs on the beach before, and people just forget that they're there. But we've already picked them up on our cameras, and so we know they're coming in to our coastal areas, and we've seen sign of the poo and everything else they leave as well. Right. So
dogs don't like to be on a lead on the beach. Are there, if we take our dogs to other places, where, like, are there some of the beaches in town, not really beaches, but around, once we're in the inner harbour here.
Yeah.
Okay, let the dog off there.
We're actually in the
urban area. So.
Yeah, that's safer. It is really interesting. Like, you sometimes see comments on Facebook where people go, "Oh, it's my dog and she loves chasing birds." And it's like, yeah, it's probably not. You know, teaching your dog not to chase birds, and I've got that challenge myself, like rearing a new pup at the moment.
Yeah.
But teaching them not to run after birds is really important, no matter where. Like, because we have other shorebirds breeding as well. We've got dotrel on some of our further, like Ruapuki and Tiakau.
Yeah.
So it's really important that if you're a dog walker, like, you can let them loose, but you need to be they need to be under control. You need to be able to call them back. And if you hit the southern part of the beach, you could just put the dog on the lead for a little bit, and then as you walk back more towards the harbour entrance, you could let them off again. So it's just about kind of knowing your dog and training them. Just like we do kiwi avoidance with dogs, you can do bird avoidance. And if your dog chases birds, you call them back and put them on the lead and teach them that that's not okay. Because that's the bird's natural habitats, and we don't want birds chased off the beach. They're not playthings for dogs.
This is true.
You know, a little bit harsh, but I'm a dog owner myself, and some of my team and friends holds me to task, if my dog would do the wrong thing. So
I was taking our dog for a walk the other day, and it wasn't chasing birds, but it just runs off and inspects things and sniffs around the place. Mm. And if it sees something to eat, it'll gobble it up before I might not even know it's happened.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes the dogs need a decent run around, so the town beaches are probably the best at this time of year, I should think.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a reality. They share the habitat, and we've just got to be super cautious. But, it has been sad when we've had birds picked up, and we've had them post-mortem analysis.
Oh, and you can see
see the marks.
Teeth. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's a somber end to the interview, but thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you for coming in. What? It's important to think about, because we always say that message, put your dog on a lead, but sometimes that's the whole point is for the dog to get a good run or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's why people are going out.
Yeah, so have control over your dog. You know.
Yeah, find a solution if that doesn't work. Yeah. All right, thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right, folks, I'm actually going to finish the show a bit early today. I've got to head off to something else. So we're all done. I'm going to play a little ad break and some more music, and I'll see you all again tomorrow.